We're in Proverbs chapter 22. Proverbs 22. This is God's word. A good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold. Rich and poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. A prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. Humility and the fear of the Lord bring wealth and honor and life. In the paths of the wicked lie thorns and snares, but he who guards his soul stays far from them. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. He who sows wickedness reaps trouble, and the rod of his fury will be destroyed. A generous man will himself be blessed, for he shares his food with the poor. Drive out the mocker, and out goes strife. Quarrels and insults are ended. He who loves a pure heart and whose speech is gracious will have the king for his friend. The eyes of the Lord keep watch over knowledge, but he frustrates the words of the unfaithful. The sluggard says, "There is a lion outside," or, "I will be murdered in the streets." The mouth of an adulteress is a deep pit. He who is under the Lord's wrath will fall into it. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. He who oppresses the poor to increase his wealth, and he who gives gifts to the rich, both come to poverty. Pay attention and listen to the sayings of the wise. Apply your heart to what I teach, for it is pleasing when you keep them in your heart and have all of them ready on your lips, so that your trust may be in the Lord. I teach you today, even you. Have I not written 30 sayings for you, sayings of counsel and knowledge, teaching you true and reliable words so that you can give sound answers to him who sent you? Do not exploit the poor because they are poor. And do not crush the needy in court. For the Lord will take up their case and will plunder those who plunder them. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared. Do not be a man who strikes hands in pledge or puts up security for debts. If you lack the means to pay, your very bed will be snatched from under you. Do not move an ancient boundary stone set up by your forefathers. Do you see a man skilled in his work? He will serve before kings. He will not serve before obscure men. May God add his blessing to this reading from his holy and inspired word. Lots of different themes in the midst of this, but one thing that I want you to see overriding all of it. It is the basis of wisdom. It is the basis of all these different areas of application of wisdom. And that is in verse 19. I'm teaching you these things, why? Here's the explanation. So that your trust may be in the Lord. So that your trust may be in the Lord. The purpose of this instruction, the basis of it, the goal of it, it's all about this, that your trust may be in the Lord. Because if your trust is in the Lord, it's going to affect every area of your life. It's going to affect your finances, your marriage, your child rearing, your work ethic, everything you do. grows out of whether or not your trust is in the Lord. Now let's look at these verses together. A good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold. Let me tell you what that does not mean. Live your life all about appearances, trying to make sure everyone thinks well of you. That's not what that's talking about. You live that way, that's living according to the fear of man. That is not a good way to live. What does it mean? It means you live a life of integrity and righteousness, and that is worth more than any amount of material wealth that you could accumulate. When it says a good name is more desirable than great riches, and to be esteemed is better than silver or gold, it's saying material things do not matter as much as character, as much as the reputation you leave behind. A fellow that I knew, his family, I did not know him, but his family said they were so astounded when he died at all the people who came to his funeral. The guy was a car dealer. And at his funeral, people were lined up out of the church in order to come and pay respects. And his family learned from the people who came of all these amazing things that this guy had quietly done to meet the needs of other people. His family didn't even know what he was up to. I mean, they thought he was a wonderful guy, a great dad, all that kind of stuff. But here was a man who had left behind a legacy of having done the right thing, meeting the needs of others, honoring the Lord in his private conduct. That's what this verse is talking about. Verse 2, rich and poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. What that is saying is not that God makes some people poor. That's a whole other subject. What this is saying is that whether a person is rich or whether a person is poor, God is the one who made that person. And therefore, you're to treat that person's life as something that is valuable. Don't say, well, that person's worth a lot. Well, that person's not worth much. No. The amount of money they have doesn't determine their worth. God is the one who has made all of us, and therefore we all must treat one another with respect. Every life has value and meaning. Verse 3, a prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. Are we supposed to live in fear? No. Are we supposed to live in faith? Yes. Well, if I'm living a life of faith, doesn't that mean that I can go out in the midst of an electrical storm holding up a metal rod? No. I'm supposed to trust God, but I'm not supposed to be an idiot. Now, if God tells me, I want you to go outside and show everybody what a lightning bolt can do to a man. Oh, are you sure that's what you want, Lord? I need to be prepared to obey God fearlessly no matter what. But God has given me a brain, so I wear a seatbelt and I thank God for airbags. Does that make sense? I'm not afraid to get in my car and drive because what if there's a wreck? I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to die. But I don't want to be stupid. I drive on my side of the road, going in the correct direction. I try to stay within the speed limit. I really try. I want to make sure that there's air in the tires and that there's tread on the tires. That's not living fearfully. That's living prudently. That's being wise. It is good when you see danger, to take warning and respond accordingly. I don't think I'll ever forget having dinner with several people at a table we'd not met before. And one of the couples, as we started talking, just out of the overflow of their heart, told us about something that had happened that the dad said he just can't get out of his mind. He took his son boating on the lake. And a storm came up. And his son said, "Dad, we need to go back." And his dad said, "No, let's just stay out a while longer." And his son was struck by lightning and killed. And he said, if I'd gone back when he said, we would have been on shore when that storm hit. But he said, I thought we'd have some fun together. A prudent person sees the danger and acts accordingly. You don't have to live in constant dread and fear and, oh no, what if there's an electrical storm? But folks, don't be foolish. Don't think that because you're immune. Everybody else may need a seatbelt, but I don't. Everybody else ought to obey the speed limit, but not me. I've got great reflexes. Be prudent. Be wise. A prudent person sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. Did you hear that? And suffer for it. There are consequences to foolish behavior. Don't go that road. Verse 4, humility and the fear of the Lord bring wealth and honor and life. How many of you would like wealth, honor, and life? Sound good? Okay. Well, here's a path. Humility and the fear of the Lord. So, Pastor Wood, are you saying that we will all be materially wealthy if we just fear the Lord and are humble? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if I plant corn, I can expect to get corn. I'm not guaranteed that there won't be weevils or hail or any number of things that could affect my crop. But I know that if I plant corn, I'm not going to get potatoes. Right? And so, humility and the fear of the Lord, what that tends to produce in a person's life is wealth and honor and life. That brings good stuff. So what do I need to do? Pursue humility and the fear of the Lord. And those two go together. If I really reverence the Lord, it will produce humility in my life. If you know who God is and what God is like, tends to make you humble because you realize I am very small, I can do nothing apart from Him, and I have messed up more times than I can count. Verse 5, in the paths of the wicked lie thorns and snares, but he who guards his soul stays far from them. What is that saying? It's saying in the path of the wicked there are all kinds of snares, all kinds of things to mess you up. If you value your own life, if you guard your soul, you will stay far away from the paths of the wicked. You'll stay far away from those snares because you don't want to go there. I despise the question that young people typically ask youth leaders and pastors after they hit puberty. How far can I go? What are they talking about? They're saying, I know this is wrong, but how close can I get to that? And it's still okay. Did you know that it is not only dangerous, it is therefore foolish to see how close you can get to disaster. Okay? My heart is overflowing. I will try and limit what I say. Don't flirt with sin. Don't play around with disaster. Whether it's squirting, and this is not sin, this is just stupid, which I guess it could be sinfully stupid. Squirting lighter fluid on a fire, you may do it 6 times without incident. But about the time that thing blows up in your face, you can't press rewind. don't mess with stuff that you know is wrong. Stay away from it. He who guards his soul stays far from them. Don't be trying to figure out how far you can go. Instead, pursue, how much can I save? I want to be holy, not, I don't want to get pregnant. Is that clear? You understand the difference? Verse 6, train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not turn from it. That is a wonderful, comforting promise from God. But not everybody applies that verse properly. If you train up a child in the way he should go, that's going to be the course of his life. That's going to be the direction he heads. This is not, as some people misapply it, a promise that, well, you know, I mean, he's been in trouble ever since he's about 13, but I believe he's 68 now, and I believe he's going to come back because I know he was trained right. No, I think he was train wrecked. Know what I mean? If you train up a child in the way he should go, that's the way he'll continue. Will there sometimes be deviations? And yeah, that happens sometimes. But the overall course and direction will be in the direction he was trained to go. So are parents completely responsible for their children's mess ups? Their mothers are. No, I'm kidding. Not true. Guess who's responsible for a kid's mess ups? The kid. But parents are responsible for the kind of training that they give. And unfortunately, sometimes parents don't give a lot of training. They might give instruction, but training involves more than just words. It involves enforcing boundaries because you love the child. And when we fail to do that, I've had to apologize to my children before for having failed to be strict enough and really rein them in and hold the line. Now, I don't like having to apologize. But it's, if you start with them when they're young, you can increasingly relax the boundaries as they get older. It is really hard to be letting them run around, he's just four. Honey, put down that blowtorch. Oh, he is just a pistol, isn't he? Do you think you're going to rein him in when he gets older? That's not the way it works. You start out strict and you relax more and more as they get older. I hope everybody gets that. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. This is a fact. This is descriptive. Would you rather be the servant to the lender? You put yourself in a position of subordination when you borrow. Don't do that. Don't borrow. Right now, the ranch could take just a parcel of our land, just a part of it, get a loan, come in here, build the chapel, pave all the roads, give everybody a raise, and then figure out how we're going to pay it off as we go along. Okay? We could. That's what most ministries would do. Why don't we do that? Because God told us not to. At the start of this ministry, the Lord said, don't borrow. So we said, okay. And as a result, there have been things that I've been praying for years. I want to see this happen. Please, Lord, I want to see it happen. I'm not dead yet. It can still happen. Don't put yourself in the position of being somebody else's servant unnecessarily. Be the Lord's servant. Wait on Him. Trust in Him. The borrower is servant to the lender. Verse 9. Let's go back to verse 8. I'm trying to move ahead because we've got so many I want to talk about. Verse 8, he who sows wickedness reaps trouble. Remember what I said about planting corn? You're going to get corn. Okay, if you sow wickedness, it's going to come back as trouble. The two go hand in hand. And the rod of his fury will be destroyed. In other words, he may seem temporarily like he's this, you know, major force to be reckoned with. But if it's a wicked person, God has promised them destruction. And God keeps his promises. Verse 9, a generous man will himself be blessed, for he shares his food with the poor. A generous man will himself be blessed, for he shares his food with the poor. You never outgive God. And as we saw before, he who gives to the poor lends to the Lord. Verse 10. Drive out the mocker and out goes strife. Quarrels and insults are ended. Sometimes there is an individual in a group who is constantly stirring things up. They're the mocker. And out of their presence, you get all kinds of strife. And this proverb accurately describes the fact that when that person is removed from the mix, whoosh, it's peace. Folks, don't be that person. Don't be that person. Do not be the person who creates problems everywhere you go. One of the things we do when we interview potential staff here is to ask them about their previous experiences. And if everybody they've worked for is a jerk, we don't hire them. Because I don't want to be the next jerk. You know, what is the common thread in all these experiences? It's that employee. Every place they went, it was problems. It was, and the person, and they were just, and I'm thinking, well, have a nice life. We don't need you here. But if you talk to people, they had a wonderful experience here, and they had a wonderful experience there, and here things were kind of tough, but, you know, but there were these good things. That's a person who's going to come in here, and when they don't like something that somebody's doing, they'll still find the good. They're going to find the good in it. Don't be the person who constantly brings about strife and quarrels and insults. You may think you're being really clever, but you're being very foolish. Verse 11, he who loves a pure heart and whose speech is gracious will have the king for his friend. Is that a contrast to the one who stirs up strife and quarrels and insults? He who loves a pure heart and whose speech is gracious will have the king for his friend. Verse 13, the sluggard says, there's a lion outside or I'll be murdered in the streets. What does that mean? It means a lazy person constantly makes outlandish excuses for why they can't do what they're supposed to do. There's a lion in the streets. Is this really because there's a lion in the streets? No, it's because I don't want to go outside. Okay? How about if we go for a hike? I think it may rain. Okay? That's not really it. You don't want to go on the climbing machine. I mean, you don't want to exert yourself. A lazy person comes up with excuses. That's what verse 13 could be paraphrased to say. Verse 14, the mouth of an adulteress is a deep pit. He who is under the Lord's wrath will fall into it. This is a recurring theme in Solomon. What he's saying is, sexual sin is a disastrous trap. The person who falls into that is under the wrath of God. You don't want the wrath of God. Okay? You say, well, I realize it could jeopardize my career. It could jeopardize my marriage. It can jeopardize your forever. Adultery is not just a part of life. Adultery is a sin. And so when we're warned that the person who falls into it is under the Lord's wrath, we need to take that very seriously. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. That's good news. That means even though kids naturally have a tendency to do the wrong thing, it's possible to help them get over that. Folly is bound up in their heart. They're just full of it. Anybody here ever been like that? I was a reasonably compliant child. In fact, you might even say I was an unreasonably compliant child. But I had limits. My mom wanted me to carry the toys down the stairs, into the basement, around the corner, and put them in the toy chest. Whenever you're done playing with them, just take them back down, put them in the toy chest. Don't leave them around the house. Well, I decided there was a more efficient way of doing this, and that is I would stand at the top of the stairs and throw them down into the basement. Then later, whenever I wanted to go down, get more toys, or do something else in the basement, I would go down the stairs and pick up my toys and put them in the toy chest. I wasn't unwilling to put my toys in the toy chest. I just didn't see why I should have to go down the stairs every time. I was a little guy, big stairs. You know, come on, be reasonable. Mom says, carry them down. Most of my toys were stuffed animals. Some of them were other things. Unfortunately, one of them was a small cat. I didn't understand. I had no idea of what a live pet was. It was just a little ball of fur. It was like my other stuffed animals. So, what do you do when you're done with your toys? I just tossed it down the stairs. That's terrible! Folly is bound up in the heart of a child. But I can tell you this from personal experience. The rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Okay? I wasn't trying to be cruel. I really did not understand. Later on, shortly after, when I learned about live animals, and I felt awful. That was terrible. But my parents at that point realized I was not ready for a pet. He who oppresses the poor to increase his wealth, and he who gives gifts to the rich, both come to poverty. What are you supposed to do with your giving? You're supposed to give to people who need it. You're supposed to give to people you can actually help. You're supposed to do something beneficial for others. If instead you value riches, you're liable to do two stupid things. One is to oppress the poor. I can take advantage of them because they don't have power, because they don't have money. And I will thereby get my own wealth even greater. Did you know that gas and groceries and everything else are generally cheaper in wealthy neighborhoods? Not always, but generally. Because there's more competition and businesses want to be there. But a person who's opening a business in a place where there's high crime, not a lot of paying customers, they will tend to jack the prices up because they're trying to be sure they cover everything. But the result is poor people often end up spending more with inflated prices than the wealthy are able to. Well, let's put it this way. Most poor people can't afford a membership at Costco. Got it? So what do we tend to do? We tend to favor the wealthy, and we tend to exploit the poor. I mean, not cruelly. I mean, it's just kind of like me throwing the kitten down the stairs. We're just not thinking. We're just not realizing the impact of what we're doing. And what I'm not saying it's wrong to be a member at Costco, but you know, it might be really nice I don't know, maybe it wouldn't be nice. I was going to say give a Costco membership to somebody who can't afford one. But then some of those folks, unfortunately, I know from personal experience, would go and buy the great big TV. So forget that. Here's the thing. I think he's just doing stream of consciousness, I think. Here's the thing. If you exploit the poor in order to increase your wealth, you will end up being poor. God will see to it. That's the promise. Furthermore, if in order to try and gain advantage for yourself, you give gifts to people who are already rich, you will end up being poor. God will see to it, because it is a misuse of resources that God has entrusted to you. Okay? Now, beginning in verse 17, you've got a collection, a special collection of sayings. And it begins in verse 17 by saying, pay attention to these things. But look at verse 19 again. So that your trust may be in the Lord, I teach you today, even you. The goal of this teaching is so that you may trust in the Lord. That is what it's all about. Verse 22, do not exploit the poor because they are poor, and do not crush the needy in court, for the Lord will take up their case and will plunder those who plunder them. Did you hear that? The Lord will take up their case and will plunder those who plunder them. If you take advantage of poor people because they're poor, if you think you can get away with it because they don't have the resources to fight back, God will crush you. Because injustice angers the Lord. Verse 24. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Don't associate with one who is easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared. This not only says you're not supposed to make friends with a person like that, but it says you're in danger if you associate with one who is easily angered. You may get yourself ensnared. I would just like to offer, especially for our young men, because I don't think it's as much of a temptation for the young ladies, statistically speaking. You need to be careful what kind of video fantasies you're involved in. Because if you're sitting there imagining yourself blowing everybody's head off, okay, if your idea of fun is to be the guy who swaggers through town with a weapon that you can just blow people away with, and that is really fun, that is not a good fantasy. That is not a good fantasy. That is planting the wrong stuff in your head. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared. Do not be a man who strikes hands in pledge, verse 26, or puts up security for debts. Why? Because if you lack the means to pay, your very bed will be snatched from under you. Well, no, I have the means to pay. Well, then pay it. Don't be putting up security for debts. Because this person asks you to cover this, and well, yeah, I think I could do that. And this person asks you to, and pretty soon, you've got a bunch of debt with your name on it. Had a friend in Atlanta. We asked him to take a position of leadership in the church. He said, Pastor, I hope in a few years I can, but right now would not be a good time. And I said, why is that? He said, I've got too many millions of dollars out there with my name on them. He had provided his name and his assets as security for this, and as security for this, and as security for this. And the problem is, I can cover this, or I can cover this, or I can cover this. But if all those things were to come through, I can't cover that. And I don't want our church to be associated with my bad decisions. I'm happy to say that he did work his way out of that mess, but it took him a few years. But he did it by putting up security for others, trying to be nice, But folks, you can't give what you don't have. Is that clear? I hope so. Do not move an ancient boundary stone set up by your forefathers. What's wrong? I mean, what is a boundary stone? It's a marker that says this is where the edge of the property is. What happens if you move one of those? It's not talking about moving because you want to mow around it. It's saying if you cheat somebody by going out into a place where it's not easily discovered and you move where the property is, because we, you know, man, I wish that was mine. Well, let's just move the boundary stone. That's a way of cheating somebody. Don't cheat people. Why? Well, because the Lord says not to. And the goal of this is so that your trust may be in the Lord. You do the right thing. And verse 29 is one that every single one of you needs to memorize. So let's say it together. Do you see a man skilled in his work? He will serve before kings. He will not serve before obscure men. For thousands of years, people who are good at what they do have been rare. For thousands of years. This is old stuff. But the fact of the matter is, if someone is skilled in his work, he's an unusual find. There are lots of mechanics. There aren't a lot of really good mechanics. There are lots of cooks, but there aren't really that many great cooks. There are lots of musicians, but there are not that many great musicians. There are lots of teachers, but there are not that many great teachers. Most people are not really all that good at what they do. And if you are good at what you do, you tend to get promoted until you finally get into a position you're not very good at. And then you get stuck there. And it's a bad plan, but it's the way it tends to work. And it has for thousands of years. I plead with you. Find something you're really good at and do that. Do that. If you're working at something that you're not really good at, you're probably in the wrong position. I'm 10 years old. I mean, how does this apply to me? Here's how it applies to you. Everybody has different strengths and different weaknesses. And if you think that in order to be successful in life, you've got to do what that person does, you've got to become like that, then you can spend your life working hard to get good at that when that's not really what God designed you to do. But there are some things that God designed you to do and that you can be great at. Not me, I'm not really good at anything. You can be. You can be really good at something. Find what it is, and you will be a blessing to others. I've had all kinds of jobs, and I've tried to do my best at each one. I want you to know that in my opinion, I am the best janitor that the L. Nelson Bell Library at Montreat College ever had. Okay? I was the first janitor at the L. Nelson Bell Library. And man, everything was spotless when that building was dedicated. And I wanted to keep it that way. So I would get down on my hands and knees and I would get all the heel marks off the white tile in the conference area. Every day after work, when everybody left, I was in there getting all the heel marks off the floor. Because everybody who walked on that floor seemed to have soft rubber soles that left heel marks everywhere. And I would get down, and when I was done, I mean, I'd get all the heel marks off by hand with a little thing of steel wool, and then I would wax and polish that floor, and I mean, it would shine. It was beautiful. Whoever planned that, bad choice of tile. But, I mean, it was this beautiful white floor. And the next day, people would come in. It would look beautiful. People would comment on how great it was, and they'd walk all over it, and at the end of the day, it was covered with heel marks. And I would get down, and I would do the whole floor all over again. I mean, I kept that thing meticulously clean. I went around, that whole building was my area, and I kept it clean. Now, I don't think that what God called me to in life was to spend the rest of my life down on my hands and knees scrubbing the floor. I do believe it was important when that was my job for me to do it to the best of my ability. But I'll tell you something. If you and I don't do our best at whatever we're called to do, whatever God gives us the opportunity to do, we're not honoring Him. Whatever your job is, give it your best. But along the way, you may find that there's something God has gifted you to do that really you shine. That's where you're strong. That's when you're at your best. And when you find that, begin to prayerfully cultivate that gift. Begin to really work on that job. And ask God to help you do it for His glory. Do you see a man who's skilled in his work? It's a rare thing. That person will serve before kings. He will not serve before obscure men. Do you want to be an exception? Be skilled in your work. Be skilled in your work. You'll stand out. And that is much better because you can give that as praise to God. Let's pray. Father, thank You so much for Your word. Thank You that it's true. And thank You that from it, we receive direction. We pray that we would trust in Jesus as the one who is Lord, who humbled Himself, became a servant, was obedient even to the point of death on a cross. But now grant that in following Him, we would be willing to do whatever You give us to do, in order that Your name would be praised as a result of our obedience. And we'll give You the praise in Jesus' name. Amen.